What's up, gentlemen? This is Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast about how to rise up after your divorce. I'm your host, divorce coach, Michael Rhodes. Let's get into it. Joining me today is Dr. Sharon Martin. Dr. Sharon, let's just jump right into it, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Great. Thank you so much. So I am a licensed psychotherapist practicing in California, and I'm also the author of several self-help books. And I write a column for Psychology Today that's called Conquering Codependency. And my work focuses obviously on codependency, but also on some of the related topics, which would be things like people-pleasing and perfectionism, setting boundaries, and creating healthy relationships.
Well, there's a lot there to dive into. So there, obviously your codependency is sort of your thing, and that's why I reached out. Particularly because, I mean, I do see, so I also, in addition to this, I run a Facebook group of divorced men. There's about 7,000 men in there. And so I do see some codependency issues come up, but one sort of avenue, well, before I get to that, let's first, I like to define things. What is, in your definition, codependency? How do you define it?
Yeah, let's give it a shot. It's actually a fairly complicated idea, and there's a lot of different components to it. But I would say one of the core characteristics of it is there is an outward focus. And by that, I mean, there is so much focus on somebody else and what they're doing, their behavior, their problems, their feelings, their needs, their wants, so much focus over there that we tend to then neglect ourselves. And there's an element of self-sacrificing that's going on because of that focus on somebody else. And what we're really wanting or needing is for there to be more balance in our relationships so that we can care about other people, you know, be interested in taking care of their feelings and their needs, but also being able to do the same for ourselves. But when we're talking about codependency, it's really lopsided. So it's not, you know, that there's give and take in relationships. It's really you're giving and giving and giving, and you're not receiving back. And some of that is because you may end up in relationships with people who are not capable or interested in giving back. But the other piece is for codependents also, it's just simply it's hard for them to receive caretaking as well. They feel much more comfortable in the role of the caretaker and the person who is giving in the relationship.
Boy, that triggers something to address, but I can't figure out what it is quite yet. But let me sort of put that in the back of my brain and think about that. How does one know that? It sounds like it would be obvious that I am codependent because I am only giving and not receiving. But how does someone know that? Is there some telltale signs that a person can look at and go, "Yes, I am clearly codependent"?
Yeah. So let's dig into that a little bit. So, I mean, I think one piece of it is that you aren't taking care of yourself. So you can think about, well, what would that look like in your life? So one piece of it might be that you're not very in touch with your own feelings. You tend to like minimize those or dismiss them. And it can also be just like basic self-care, like you're tired because you're prioritizing other people's needs ahead of your own. And it can also turn out, oftentimes you will end up feeling really resentful after a while because, right, this is not sustainable. If you think about a healthy relationship, you can't just give and not receive. And like we're saying, it's also, you're not giving to yourself in that form of self-care, either. So if you're trying to do things for other people all of the time, sometimes that might be received well, but again, this is what kind of differentiates just taking care of other people in a healthy sense and this sort of codependent caretaking is what we tend to do is we're trying to help people or take care of them or fix them or change them, but they don't really want the help that we're trying to give them. So you might find yourself giving unsolicited advice, saying the same thing over and over again to try to get somebody to change, thinking like you really think that you have some good advice. You think you've got this wisdom that will be helpful to somebody, but they either don't want it or they say they are going to make the change and then they don't. Or you just feel like you're doing all of this work on other people's behalf, but they're not grateful for it. So again, that just sort of plants all these seeds of resentment. And you might just go around feeling, unhappy, but not necessarily know exactly what that's about. So that might be a place of, reflection for folks, is to really think about, okay, like, what is going on in my relationships? Is there, reciprocity? Is there this equity of, what we're both putting in the same amount of effort? Or does it feel like I'm the person who is doing all the work? I'm always responsible for everything. And the other person is, sometimes what it happens is there's sort of one person who's the codependent in this situation is sort of overly responsible and, taking care of everything and making sure everything's running smoothly. And that allows the other person to underfunction, right? There's that element that sort of enables the other person because they know you're going to be taking care of everything, right? So they can either, be somewhat immature about things, or what I was saying is we sometimes use this term sort of underfunctioning to describe that they're not sort of living up to all of their adult responsibilities.
Oh,
And
man.
sometimes that's just like a person who is emotionally immature, or sometimes it's a person who is struggling with mental health issues or substance use issues. Sometimes those are the obvious, signs as well. If you find yourself in relationship with people who just can't sort of manage their own lives, then they're relying on you to do some of that for them.
So, gosh, that leads to so many things, so many thoughts. Why? I mean, that's the big one. Like, why do people tolerate that type of a relationship? Is there an underlying reason? And I know it's hard to sort of pinpoint things, right? There's a spectrum, I'm sure, but is it low self-worth and self-esteem issues of the codependent person, of the giver, right? Is it an anxious attachment style? Typically, it sounds like it would be. Is there an underlying, and I'm sure the answer is childhood, it always is, but is there an underlying like things that we can point to and say, this is why I'm codependent?
Yes. Well, you've hit the nail on the head already, Michael. So, yes, I'd say yes to all of the things that you just said. So, absolutely. We can think about this right through an anxious attachment lens. We can think about this through a self-esteem lens. And, I think both of those can be helpful. So there is this, even though you might be feeling resentful and unhappy about, what's going on in the relationship, you as the codependent person are also deriving some sense of self-worth from being the person who is overly responsible and doing the caretaking and right, doing all this stuff makes you feel like you're worthwhile, you're needed. And so again, and now if we move into that anxious piece, right, there's probably this also this underlying anxiety that is probably not conscious, but some worry that I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I might be criticized or rejected or left. And so that's part of why we put up with it, right? Is because we don't want to be alone. And again, this is, happens in so many different situations is we choose to be in dysfunctional relationships rather than to be without a relationship, which it doesn't make logical sense, but it makes emotional sense, right? Especially if we think back to childhood. And right, this is called codependency because there is dependency, right? We are depending on other people to make us feel good, worthwhile, lovable, right? Instead of what we really need is to be able to internally feel all of that about ourselves, regardless of what other people are saying and doing. But again, instead, we're in this sort of codependent, people-pleasing situation where we're sacrificing, we're doing for other people, we're making sure they're happy, we're making sure their needs are taken care of because we don't want to be. Like I said, we don't want to disappoint people. We want to be criticized. We don't want to be left abandoned, any of that kind of stuff. And
So I no go.
the other thing I want to add here is that even though this may all sound like really bad and dysfunctional, like to have all of these traits, what I want you to remember is they start out being very, very functional, right? So they serve a purpose in that what we are really trying to do is to feel like we have some sense of control, some sense of emotional safety in a situation that is actually, not in our control, that feels unsafe emotionally. It doesn't feel good. And so this is our attempt to, try to control what's going on around us to, create some safety for ourselves. So it has its roots in trying to be functional. And especially if you think back to childhood, and if you recognize yourself doing some of these things in childhood, it makes a lot of sense. If you had, sort of a dysfunctional or chaotic or unpredictable home situation. And then often what happens is, we keep doing the same thing. We, have the same coping skills in adulthood, but now we realize, well, this isn't really working very well for me. It sort of worked to an extent in childhood because you didn't have a lot of other resources or coping skills, but now you realize, okay, this is just leading to, me being unhappy and having unfulfilling relationships and, being resentful and tired and all of that.
So it's, I mean, it's essentially it's a foundational thing, right? It doesn't everything start from your childhood? Doesn't everything come from there? I mean, it's really that sets the tone for the rest of your life. Those are your initial relationships. They're obviously not romantic, but they're your template for how you're supposed to
Yes.
behave in a close relationship. Okay, that leads to other questions, but I want to shift to I took a bunch of notes, so if you see me scribbling, it's because I'm taking notes. Do people that are typically codependent, I mean, I think I know this answer, but I just want to put it out there anyway. If they're not conscious and aware, they're going to, do they typically attract the same type of partner, and are the same types of partners attracted to them? That makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. We tend to see that this is a pattern that people will get into, and they, often recognize it. But sometimes then they're sort of like, I don't know how to get out of it. I feel stuck in it. Or sometimes people will be surprised, if they've had, multiple codependent relationships, and it's like they don't realize until they're in it. So they're sort of not spotting the, what's going on ahead of time. I've had, like people will say, I had no idea, that this person I was dating was an alcoholic until 6 months in, which you think, well, how is that possible?
Right.
But right, I mean, there's, elements of denial that are going on probably for both people. And, we can convince ourselves of a lot of things,
That's
if we
very
try
true.
to, right?
Yeah.
And it is, if you're not aware of it, and you just get used to it as well, right? If this is again what you witnessed growing up in childhood, and then you have multiple relationships like this, and it can even be in other kinds of relationships, not just romantic relationships. You can have, essentially codependent friendships or, other kinds of relationships as well. And so we get used to the, the same kind of relationship. And again, even if we know it's not working for us, sometimes it's hard to put your finger on what it is that's going on. So, I mean, I think this is fantastic. Hopefully people will, take some time and actually think about, okay, do I see that pattern? Because again, that should definitely be a warning sign for
Sure.
people. I mean, it's possible that, there weren't other relationships that have this dynamic, but there often are.
Yeah. Is there a healthy amount of codependency in a, I mean, there is, right? I mean, there has to be. If you're in a relationship, you do depend on someone somewhat, right? Is there a healthy amount of codependency? I would think so.
Yes and no. I guess maybe we don't necessarily frame it that way. I mean, there is a healthy amount of dependency, but we don't really call it codependency anymore.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right. We often you'll see the term interdependency
Okay.
used to describe what you're talking about, like this healthy amount of dependency on people, because you're right. Our goal is not to be so independent and autonomous that we don't need anybody ever. Right. That's actually not a really healthy way to go through life either. We want to feel like we can count on people, but again, we can go back to this idea that the relationship has balance, right? So that I can, get some validation and affirmation and, positive stuff from my partner, but also I know these things are true about me, even if I'm not getting that positive, affirmation today or for a week, then my self-esteem doesn't crumble. Right. It's so.
I just it's just another thought. This is why I make outlines, because shit pops in my head all the time. Do you, in your practice and in your profession and your experience, and this is, there's some caveat to this question. Do you see more men as codependent or more women? And well, I'll let you answer that first, and then I have a sort of an addendum, I would say, to that.
It's a great question. I wish I had like some hard data for you. I do not. I don't know if it exists or not. I'm
Not
kind of
sure.
guessing it doesn't. But it's an interesting question because I think we tend to think that this is more of an issue for women because women are socialized to be caretakers and to think about other people's feelings and needs and, that's sort of a traditional female role more so than male. But I have seen many men in my practice who struggle with codependency. So I think that ends up just being, sort of an unhelpful, antiquated idea. And even if you go back to the roots of the history of the term codependency, it was actually a term that was developed to describe the wives of alcoholic men and the behavior and the struggles that these women were having. But now we have realized that actually the term codependency and what we're talking about has much bigger roots than this. I mean, both in terms of gender, but also it's obviously it doesn't just take place in relationships where there's substance use. So we now recognize that really this can describe a lot of different kinds of relationships for a lot of different kinds of people. So.
I mean, I think even if there were hard numbers, I would think that they may be skewed anyway, because I think perhaps in my experience, there's a tendency for men not to seek out help and support. But it maybe I'm wrong there, but that's my take on it. And then therefore, how do you really know? I do think that most of these types of problems, attachment styles, narcissism, whatever, maybe there's data that says there's one gender versus the other is more, but I think it's a universal human problem. But maybe I'm wrong. That leads to, I guess, all of this, we're sort of defining it pretty thoroughly here, and sort of, encapsulating the problem. That leads to the question is, how do you stop it? If you are a codependent person, how do you change that?
I can just sort of quickly walk you through this framework that I use with folks. And there's basically three core tasks of codependency recovery that I use anyway. Other people may have a different approach, but this is what I do. And I think if you just think about these three things, it sort of feels like it's easy to understand. It's not easy to do, but basically what they are is the first one is know yourself, the second one is love yourself, and the third one is be yourself. So I can just kind of quickly give you a little bit of overview of what those are and why that's important. So the first one is to know who you are. So this really speaks to the element of codependency that we have become sort of detached from ourselves. And again, thinking so much about other people and what's going on with them and, all of that caretaking, that we lose track of our own identity and what matters to us, what we're interested in, what our goals are. You may even have a lot of your identity wrapped up in this relationship. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a son. And so, in order to recover, part of what we need to do is spend some time getting to know ourselves again. And this is really a process. It's not a like a one and done, I'm going to check it off the list this weekend. But it's something that you can slowly do with some intention and some investment of time and energy into it. But really, thinking about, okay, what are some of the things that I might be, might be important to me. What are some of those things that I have lost maybe in this relationship in terms of, whether that's friendships or hobbies or interests or goals? Oftentimes you find that there are things that you've given up along the way. And it's honestly, it's not uncommon for people when they come to therapy around these issues to just feel like, I don't really even know what I like anymore or what my opinion on this is anymore. And it really takes some time to go back and, think about, okay, who am I? What matters to me? Rather than, again, thinking about everybody else. So that's that first piece. And feel free to, chime in if there's any, questions as I'm going through
Sure.
this. And then the second one is to learn how to love yourself. Right, that's a big task, right?
I struggle with, yes, it is. I struggle with that one only because I think sometimes, I mean, I don't mean personally, although probably, I think the love, like defining that, I think can be tricky. It sounds simple or simple, but I think for me, I always tell guys, you got to respect yourself because I think love sometimes gets skewed by our childhoods. We had parents who loved us, who beat the shit out of us or whatever. So I think, love is a bit of a funky, but I understand it, but for me personally, I always shy away from that because, and that maybe that's sad. I don't know, but I feel like respect, and maybe they're similar, or maybe it's close enough. But that's my struggles. So I digress. You can continue.
No, I think it's a valid point, and I think, I like the idea also that people can take this and tweak it a little bit
Sure,
if
sure.
respect feels, like something that feels like a better place to start anyway. That's certainly fine.
But.
What I'm really getting at is the idea of like self-compassion,
There
right?
you
The
go.
idea that you're going to treat yourself with the same kindness, respect, love that you do other people. And again,
Yeah.
this is again where we get thrown off as codependents. We know how to love and take care of and, do all that good stuff with other people, but we're not good about giving it to ourselves. But, this is what I always tell people is, though, if you have the skills to be able to love others, you actually know how to love yourself.
That's a
It
great
just,
point.
it's the same exact thing. And again, I mean, it's not easy because we're really working against, some of that programming that we got early on. But, we can learn how to do the same thing for ourselves and recognize when we're in pain, when we're struggling with something, and then instead of either ignoring that, saying I shouldn't feel that way, or being hard on ourselves because we're having a hard time. What we want to do is think, okay, what is it that I need in this situation? What can I do? What can I give to myself to make myself feel better? And again, it's the same thing that you would do if your child was having a hard time. You'd think, how would I take care of my child in this
Good
situation
point.
or my
Excellent
best
point.
friend?
Excellent
Right.
point.
And what we want to do here is like we want to learn how to feel like we are good enough, like we're worthy of the love. And one thing that I think is important here is that we don't want to get hung up on feeling like we need to feel worthy of love before we give ourselves love. Because it's actually backwards, but that's what we often think is like when I feel good about myself, then I'll treat myself better. But actually, it works much better if you say, I'm going to treat myself better, and then I'm going to feel better about myself. And in some ways, it's easier because actions are much easier to define and control. So I can even actually set goals around doing nice things to myself for myself or saying nice things to myself, right? And I do that, I keep doing it. I'm going to feel better about myself.
Is that sort of part of the process, like setting defined goals? Like, I'm going to take myself out to dinner once a week or whatever. Is that sort of part of the sort of, I don't know if forcing yourself is the right word, but
Yes,
maybe.
yeah, some of it is because you really do need to be intentional. Because if you just,
Tension. Love that.
yeah, I mean, if you just say, oh, I want to treat myself better, but there's no actual plan about what that looks like or how I'm going to do it or when I'm going to do it, Because especially when you're starting out and you're trying to learn a new behavior, you really have to have a plan. And eventually, the goal is for it to just happen automatically. Right. But again, at the beginning, you might think it's like, you need the recipe. You're going to follow the recipe, right, and do it. Eventually, you're going to know how, you're just going to do it, right? You won't need that recipe forever. But in the beginning, I think if you don't have that plan, even a loose one, it's probably not going to happen because it's just so easy to fall back on old patterns. It's automatic. It's easy. It's, you don't have to put a lot of thought and effort into it. Anyway, so the third piece here is then to be ourselves. And by that, I mean, we can sort of live authentically. We can express ourselves fully. We know who we are. We feel good about ourselves. Now we can be in the world, as people who are happy with who we are. We can show up at work and in our relationships, with that confidence. And we're not always looking for other people to make us feel okay.
So I'm gonna ask a it might sound cynical, but it and maybe it is, I don't know. I'm a Gen Xer, so that's part of my DNA too, I think. Is it possible to become uncodependent? Because I think that's a valid question, because I think change, people can change. I do believe that. I do. But some of the stuff we're talking about is foundational stuff. Anxiousness, so your attachment style, self-worth, self-esteem, it started from very long ago, right? And I do think it is, I'm sure you do as well. But I guess I want to reinforce to those out there, if they're listening and they're like, I don't know, man, I don't think so. I've been this way for a very long time. Is it possible for someone to go from codependent to not?
Yes, there are a couple of different things that I want to say about this. One is that I think it's helpful to think about codependency on a spectrum. So you might have essentially more or less symptoms of codependency, and then you also might have more or less distress. It might cause you a lot of problems in your life, or it might not cause you that many. And so if you think about the spectrum, what you really want to do is, be sort of dialing back the codependency. And this is true of a lot of things, is we don't necessarily need to get to a place where we have no codependent traits in order to see significant improvement in our life and our relationships. So this is what I usually tell people, is that often a very modest amount of change will give you a tremendous amount of relief. So you don't need to think about, I need to undo all of this. Right? Some of it's like, I just sort of need to get it under control. Right. And awareness and practice is a big piece of this. The other thing that maybe is worth mentioning here is that, some people find using a 12-step recovery approach helpful with codependency. There's Codependence Anonymous. There's also adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families are some of the groups, Al-Anon, all of those are appropriate for people who struggle with codependency. And so if you think about codependency from that kind of recovery standpoint, what they would say is that, recovery is an ongoing process, right? You're not cured of codependency, just like you're not cured of addiction, but it's something that you continually work on. And so again, even if you don't go to 12-step meetings, I think sometimes that can be a helpful thing to remember is, is that like any big change, you got to keep working at it. Like it's, there's not that many things that you can just, say I've conquered that and it's never going to be an issue for me again, right? As you were saying, I mean, so many of the things that really have deep roots are things that we have to continue to pay attention to. Otherwise, when we get stressed, things fall apart in our lives, we tend to revert back. That's just human nature, unfortunately.
Is there, a lot of times, I know I certainly felt it when my ex, now ex-wife, said, I'm out. Actually, I got an email that said I moved out. I definitely felt that loss of of self, that loss of identity. And is there such a thing as sort of situational codependence, or is it just a microcosm, or is it just magnified, I should say, at that point? And it was always kind of there, but I didn't, it didn't register, or whatever, or it wasn't significant or whatever. So is it a situational thing, or is it something that just does blow up, and it gets exacerbated by an actual someone actually leaving?
Yeah, I mean, it could be both. I mean, I think if it's really just a situational issue, it's probably not truly codependency. But like what you're talking about, like that there's a loss of self when your marriage ends seems totally normal, right? You had this role, now you don't, right? Everything's in chaos. And so if that's sort of the only sign that somebody identifies with of what we're talking about, I'd say, well, that's probably really just like, I don't know what you want to call that, divorce related stress, identity, issues, right? Things that, we would then sort of expect will resolve as you work through the process of the divorce and the acceptance and, the grieving and the healing of that. And if that was the case, then we wouldn't really expect that there's going to be a pattern. We wouldn't really expect that, you'd be needing to worry about this in future relationships. But I think the other situation is you see something like that going on in your life, and suddenly you have a huge awareness of a lot of other problems that were going on that maybe you just hadn't really been paying attention to or didn't seem like that big a deal. Again, denial happens certainly. And hindsight's 2020 kind of thing, right? You start to
Very
look
true.
back and you say, oh, I see a lot of issues here that, didn't seem to be that big of a problem, a year ago, but now, So, I think it can also really, the crisis can highlight the problems that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, very true. Is there, I know it's hard to sort of quantify things, but in your experience, is there one thing that sort of keeps codependents stuck in codependency, or brings them back in? Is like there a particular behavior or mistake? I don't know if that's the right word, but something that sort of either brings them back or keeps them there, a habit or something of that nature, or a tendency, or.
Well, there's probably a lot of answers that I could give you here, but maybe one thing that I don't think we've talked too much about is that there's sort of an underlying anxiety. That like I think this would be a good place for people to put some attention is learning how to manage your own anxiety. And you can have anxiety about a lot of different things. But part of what goes on with codependency is that we feel like everything's out of control, and that's scary. And what we're trying to do is have control over, right? And we can't control other people, but that's a lot of times what we're trying to do with that focus outside of ourselves. But really, if you can learn how to sort of have that inner calm, right? And have some strategies that you can use to stay calm when everything else is just falling apart around you. You need to be able to stay right here with yourself and say, okay, I'm going to be okay. I can handle this. Whatever somebody else is doing, whatever's, not, whatever's happening over here, it may impact me, but if there's nothing that I can do about it, my energy is truly better focused on how am I going to take care of myself,
Yeah, it's
right?
about self-soothing, right? Like being able to calm yourself by yourself, right? And not needing
Yeah,
someone
not
else to
looking, yeah,
always.
right, to somebody else to be the answer to my anxiety.
In your and again, I'm probably asking a lot of questions that are hard to quantify and qualify and stuff, but in your experience, what's the time frame? And I know it's a lifelong thing, but what's the time frame from like disaster, chaos, sort of codependency, like you just they can't function without someone, to being able to function? You're not saying they're completely healed. It doesn't sound like that's an achievable goal in a sense anyway, but what's sort of the, someone puts in some, they're determined, I'm gonna fix this, and they're determined. What's the time frame? And I know that's probably not a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Maybe not, and I'll give you just my impression. I'd say if you put in some good hard work for 6 months, you should be feeling better.
No, I
Again,
would
like I
agree.
don't think you've like solved all of it, but you should be feeling some relief.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, I mean, I feel like that's a decent time frame to, but you got to stay committed. I think, you kind of mentioned it a few times about, old patterns and old habits. They really truly do die hard. It's tough because, especially, we're talking about self-soothing, coping skills. We have the tools we have from childhood and for a very long time. Like, you don't become conscious of sort of your mistakes until much, or your, I shouldn't say mistakes, but your less than ideal tools. It's probably a more eloquent way to say that. Until much later in life, I think, until something comes up that leads you to sort of stand up and take notice, like, oh, this is not working. So it's hard to make those changes. Do you find a lot of people like start and stop? I'm sure they do, but do you, in your practice, do you see people and they're really trying and then they sort of fall off and then they come back? Do you see a lot of sort of, I know I did with therapy a little bit like that. Like, I would come and go and come and go. Do you see that a lot in your experience?
It's hard to say because I mean there are certainly a certain amount of people who sort of drop out of treatment, if you will, right? Don't really see it all the way through. But there are a lot of people who stick with it as well. I
I'd
mean,
imagine if they were get to your to the point where they're reaching out for your help, I imagine they're ready to put in some work, I would imagine.
well, I think that's what we don't know, A variable that we can't quantify here is, when do people decide to come and get help? And I think that's probably, true of a lot of situations, in terms of getting therapy or getting help, is that, in my opinion, people wait too long, right? They really, there's internal and external barriers to getting help. But yes, it's easy for me to, sit where I am and say, you should have been here, 5 years ago. This would have been easier to deal with. But, we work with what we got, of course. And now is better than never. So
Amen to
absolutely,
that.
if, people are on the fence,
No time like the present. I'm gonna ask you a little bit of a personal question, if you don't mind. Why did this become your thing? Is it your history and your experiences? If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But I'm just always
Oh no.
curious as to why do people choose the things they choose?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't mind answering it. So I am married to an alcoholic who's now been in recovery for many years. So I certainly identify myself as a codependent. And while my childhood was actually pretty good, I would say both of my parents have a certain level of codependency. They both grew up in pretty dysfunctional families. And so the other thing that we see often is that, parents sort of pass these behaviors down to their kids, right? Just in terms of modeling and teaching. I definitely feel like I got a certain amount of this as, in training as a child to behave this way. And then, right, you think about, the unconscious patterns, show up, right, later in life. And then you go, oh my gosh, how did I get into this situation? It's much worse than I thought it was. So yes, I identify as codependent, and it's something that is obviously much better for me. But there were crisis points, and there were really difficult times in dealing with all of it. But yeah, I do speak from personal experience as well as professional that I know it can get much, much better for folks, but it is really hard. It's really painful.
Well, I respect anyone that put in the time and the effort to get a degree. I have two, but they're not doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I wish. I missed that. I missed my calling in life. But having said that, and I've interviewed many folks with many degrees, And I respect all of them, but the ones that have lived the experiences that they're talking about, are, to me, are much more credible. Not to say that people that haven't been through a certain thing don't have the ability to speak about it. Clearly they do, and they're smart, but there's a lot more weight that goes with it if you also, or whoever, has lived what they're going through. And I think that's probably more typical than not, because gosh, we're all humans, we're all broken to varying degrees, right? We all had parents who weren't perfect, shockingly. So I think it's not a surprise that the majority of folks that I do talk to have also had these experiences. I don't usually even bring it up, like initial conversations, but then I get on an interview, I'm like, oh yeah, I've been divorced twice. Like, oh shit, of course. Yeah, it's everywhere. I'm gonna ask you two more things before my last question. One is there any particular book that you would recommend for folks that are facing this codependency issue?
Well, Codependent No More by Melody Beattie is the classic, and it holds up. She's revised it. It's a fantastic book. I feel like I can honestly tell you that book changed my life when I read that book. It was so affirming. And it just like described everything I was feeling and going through. And I mean, there's other books, there's newer books, but start there. It's really a great book.
Excellent. The next question is, how can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you, or find your books, or whatever?
Oh, yes. So my website is livewellwithsharonmartin.com. You'll find everything there. Probably the most pertinent book that, if anyone's interested, is the Better Boundaries workbook. People can find that at any bookstore, Amazon, or wherever. But that's a great one for learning how to set boundaries. There's a lot of communication skills in there. Also, just sort of dealing with difficult people, learning how to
Cool.
prioritize your own needs and framed as setting boundaries. So
Yeah,
that's
well,
the other
I have to
books.
have you back on to dive into that one, that particular topic further, because I think sometimes I struggle with that, and I think a lot of us do. So thank you so very much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for your time and your wisdom and your experiences. The last question that I ask everybody is, what words of wisdom would you impart to a man who is just beginning his divorce journey?
Well, I would say we talked about self-compassion, but that's what I would say is be kind to yourself. You are going through a very difficult situation. No matter what the what variables or what has happened to lead you to this place, it is difficult and you deserve compassion. Nobody has ever sort of felt better or behaved better when they're in a place of shame and blame. That doesn't really help anybody. Often we feel like that's what we deserve. But even if you can give yourself compassion because you know that it will make yourself a better person, again, for your kids or your parents or whoever else is in your life, we know from the research, it's very clear that self-compassion, actually helps people learn how to change and do better. Which is pretty amazing. And then the other thing I would say is try to have a growth mindset about what you're going through. So, if you're having a difficult time, you feel like you have messed up, and you're in that place of self-criticism, see if that can be a moment where you can just, ask yourself, what could I learn from this situation?
Yeah, excellent, excellent advice. I appreciate it. Appreciate you doing this. Hopefully we can do it again sometime and dive into that boundaries topic. Again, just thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Since my separation in July of 2019, I have done an incredible amount of work on myself. I've had many different therapists, life coaches, and went through different programs. I've taken all that I've learned and put it into my own program called Forged by Fire. If you are interested in having me help you navigate your divorce, please hit my website, risingphoenixdivorcecoach.com. I look forward to working with you.